You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Crime figures released in July by Statistics Canada show that the national crime rate last year was at its lowest level in almost four decades. In the meantime, the Correctional Service is in the middle of a billion-dollar building boom to accommodate a prison population that's ballooning because of the law and order legislation. In the fall, the Conservative government will introduce omnibus legislation to further advance its tough-on-crime agenda. Neil Boyd is a professor of criminology at Simon Fraser University, and he joins me by phone this morning to take a look at these figures. Hello, Neil.
Hello.
Now, where have we seen the crime drop? Has it been across the board, or is it in particular kinds of crimes?
Well, it's pretty much across the board. Homicide, the kinds of crimes we're most concerned about, the serious crimes of violence have dropped. Property crime has dropped. And I think this year-to-year drops, sometimes, especially with homicide, where there are fairly small numbers, they aren't too significant. And you have to look at a 10-year window to be able to answer the question whether these are actually real and significant changes in rates or, just random fluctuations from a pre-existing mean. And in the case of homicide, what we can say, and in the case of most violent crime, over the past 15 years, there has been a considerable decrease in the rate of violent crime and in the rate of homicide. So the news this year, the 2009-10 data, revealed a very significant drop year over year. It's part of a continuing trend, but I suppose we should also not be convinced that, we're continuing to move downwards, that we will, move in that direction inevitably. But certainly, the news is good news from the point of view of all of us who want social safety and want a kind of society in which there is less violence and less crime. That the crime rates have been dropping, and the year-over-year drop from the most recent data was particularly significant, or particularly large, maybe not statistically significant, but a large drop nonetheless.
Now, StatsCan has something called a crime severity index, and it also dropped to its lowest level since it was created in 1998. What is that index, and what does it tell us?
The crime severity index essentially looks at the kinds of punishment that one would expect, jail most typically, for very serious kinds of crimes. So if you sort of cluster together the crimes that are the most serious, for which people, if they were convicted, would receive terms of imprisonment, sometimes very significant terms of imprisonment, that category of crime makes up the crime severity index. So, you want, when you're talking about crime rates changing, you want to focus on the worst kinds of crime. You don't want to focus on shoplifting and whether shoplifting is going up or down. I mean, that's important, but it's not nearly as important as knowing whether homicide, sexual assault, assault with a weapon, robbery, whether those kinds of crimes are going up or down. And what the Crime Severity Index tells us is that these kinds of crimes, the most serious kinds of crimes, are actually in decline. Because, when you get to less serious crime, one of the problems is that people may not report. In Vancouver, it's quite common that your car may be broken into if you leave something visible in it downtown and you're in an open-air parking lot. And sometimes the insurance has changed, so deductibles are much greater, and people may not bother to report theft from vehicle, for example. So with property crime, we might see drops, but they might not mean as much as they would given those kinds of constraints or given those kinds of variables. With serious violent crime, it's almost always going to be reported. Certainly homicide, very high reporting level, or you find a body, it's pretty obvious what has happened in these kinds of circumstances in most cases. And so that's why the crime severity index is particularly important.
How would you explain the drop in crime rates?
Well, I think the biggest the biggest part of the drop, and here I'm talking not about year over year, not about 2009 to 2010, but about the period from about 1990 to the present, the last 15 to 20 years. We've seen the passage of the baby boom generation. And the baby boom generation, those people born between 46 and 64, they hit their crime-prone years when they were about 17. In other words, at about 1963, 64. And they left the crime-prone years about 1993. Now, the relevance of this is that when we talk about the baby boom, we're talking about a time when families typically had four children as opposed to the current 1.8. And that meant that, you know, about half of those children were male. And we know that 70% of crime is committed by young men. So when you get a bulge of young men in your population, in other words, when a higher percentage of your population is made up of young men between the ages of 15 and 29, you can expect an increase in your crime rate. To put it quite specifically, in 1977, about 17% of the population in Canada was made up of young men between the ages of 15 and 29. And today the figure is closer to 10%. So, I mean, it's true in every country in the world and in every era in human history that men are overwhelmingly responsible for violent crime, and young men particularly. And so when you get fewer young men in your population, you can expect crime rates to decrease, and that's what we've seen. That's the most significant reason for a decrease in the crime rate from the 1970s to the present. I mean, the 1970s homicide rate was about 3 per 100,000, and now we're looking at about 1.8 per 100,000. So a good deal of that can be attributed to this demographic shift.
What's the scope now, looking at the other side of the equation, what's the scope of the plans to build more prisons in Canada?
Well, I suppose it depends to some extent on the capital budgets that are allocated to Corrections Canada and how they deal with those capital budgets. But certainly the intention of the current government is to build more prisons to house people that they will imprison. I mean, they want to have mandatory minimum terms for anyone who grows more than six marijuana plants or more, a minimum term of 6 months. Now, that will actually... that will be a cost to the province, because most of those people will find their way into provincial jails, not federal jails. But the net effect of the Tory policy is a significant increase in the jail population. And, of course, they have a number of other pieces of legislation that aim to increase both the number of people serving time and the length of time that they will serve. And unfortunately, they don't seem to really be interested in listening to the best available evidence. They would rather listen to the anger and to the outrage. I mean, sometimes understandable anger and outrage at crime, but that's why we have government, I would hope, you know, to make thoughtful responses. Otherwise, we just have vigilantism. And what we've learned over time is that locking people up is really only useful for the purpose of incapacitation. We want to incapacitate Paul Bernardo. We want to incapacitate Willie Picton. That's fine. But most people we lock up will return to the community, and they won't return to the community in better shape than when they went into jail. So every commission that's looked at this issue, whether they're NDP, Liberal, or Conservative, has come to the same conclusion that imprisonment imposes significant risks and harms upon the society. It increases crime rates. It doesn't decrease crime rates. The Tories are more, I think, you know, the infliction of pain is important to them, and inflicting pain upon people who've done things that they strongly disagree with. And it doesn't really matter to them that it doesn't work. They think it might, I suppose, or they think it's appropriate for the purposes of denunciation. But I think it's very regrettable, because it's a huge amount of money at a time when we have very limited public resources, and, you know, we see education and healthcare consistently pinched, and for a government to be spending billions on the building of new prisons is actually really a travesty, and in many important respects, kind of a disgusting approach.
You said something really interesting there. You said that putting people in jail increases the crime rate. So rather than the crime rate resulting in more people in jail results in a higher crime rate.
Yeah, I mean, there are other... I should be a little more cautious about that statement. There are other factors that influence the crime rate, both with, you know, that I've talked about already, demographic shifts and so forth. But with respect to the people we incarcerate, they do more poorly as a result of incarceration than they would if we did not incarcerate them. There's a very high recidivism rate, and, you know, we can see, too, in the United States, since the mid-1980s, the U.S. has dramatically increased the percentage of its citizens in prison. And almost exclusively, you can see that the reason for this increase has to do with mandatory minimum terms for drug offenses. Now in the United States, you find a huge coalition of people, both Republicans and Democrats, including people like Newt Gingrich, George Shultz on the Republican side, who are looking at reducing the number of people in prison. It's too expensive. It doesn't work. We can't afford it. The state of California is almost bankrupt because of the number of people it imprisons. And the imprisonment is for people who are typically involved in substance abuse or in the distribution of mind-active drugs that are often much less dangerous than the drugs that we consume every day, drugs like alcohol and tobacco. So there's a very real sense in which we don't seem to know what we're doing. I mean, human beings are remarkably limited in their capacity to analyze information, at least on a collective, in a collective context. And we saw that in the United States in the 80s and moving forward, and we're now seeing it with the Harper conservatives. I think when anger and outrage dominate government policy, you get these kinds of results, and that's very regrettable.
Now, a spokesman in the federal justice minister's office said, "We do not use statistics as an excuse not to get tough on criminals. One victim of crime is still one too many." As a criminologist, what do you make of that argument?
Well, you know, they're naive, I think. It's a naive statement. I mean, yes, one victim of crime is one too many, but your policies are going to create more victims, not less, not fewer. And, you know, if you look around the world, you find that the countries that have the highest degrees of confidence in their justice systems, in the Baltic countries, in Western Europe, in Germany, they have the lowest rates of imprisonment in the world. I mean, there is the degree of confidence that a society has in its justice system is related not to the crime rate, but to the extent of imprisonment. Countries like the United States, where they have abysmally low rates of confidence, not only in their justice system, but in public health and education, these are countries that are, you know, the United States is imprisoning more people per capita than any other country in the world, and they have the lowest rates of confidence in the justice system. So the kind of thing that the minister is proposing is, again, really based on anger and outrage and isn't based on the best available evidence. I mean, the Tories bend over backwards to help victims. And certainly there's lots to be done to help victims. It's not an agenda that we should depart from, and we should probably do more than we do. But it's not the point. I mean, being sympathetic to and supporting victims is not inconsistent with lowering the rate of imprisonment.
What are your thoughts about the role that the mainstream media plays in people's attitudes and people's support for a kind of law and order agenda?
Well, I think one of the problems with media generally, with the mainstream media particularly, I suppose, but when you think of media today, you know, you can turn on the television and you can get 57 channels or more. And on the internet, you know, you can look at news from, you know, from Fox, from The Globe, from The Sun, from The Province. You know, there are so many sources of information. Nancy Grace on, you know, Crime TV. What you get, the greatest degree of coverage is focused on the most horrific of crimes. You know, we had endless coverage of the Picton trial. The typical homicide in Vancouver is one man stabs another to death in a downtown Eastside rooming house about 3 in the morning. That gets no coverage. What gets coverage are the crimes that really scare us. And so that slant, which is designed essentially to sell the news, to sell, that creates a fear of crime and creates a sense that crime is out of control. And when police-generated data come out and say, actually, you know, the crime rate's going down, people, like the Tories, I suppose, and like others in the province of Alberta and in the Fraser Valley and so on, all the places that tend to elect these crazy people, they sit up and take notice, and they won't believe the most relevant and convincing evidence. They will believe, in fact, what Nancy Grace tells them, or they will believe that, you know, there are Paul Bernardos and Willie Pictons lurking everywhere. So I think the mainstream media does us a disservice by selling crime as opposed to analyzing crime. And I've spoken to a number of reporters to say, you know, why don't you do a detailed coverage of the typical homicide in downtown Vancouver, or in Vancouver? And the response is, well, that would be pretty boring. Nobody would want to read that. So, you know, we're the in a sense, it's about, you know, the selling of particular scripts and particular stories, and the stories that sell best are the most disgusting and the most horrific. And that tends to produce a public reaction where the public get outraged. I mean, sometimes quite justifiably outraged. Some of these things that people do are pretty disgusting. But that doesn't mean that our response, you know, doesn't mean that we shouldn't be thoughtful in our response, that we should just get angry and you know, degenerate essentially to the same kind of mob violence that we saw in Vancouver after the last game of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's been good to talk to you this morning, Neil. Thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Neil Boyd. He's a professor of criminology at Simon Fraser University.